Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I have seen CSI thrown through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and these are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 4, Episode 7, Invisible Evidence. Original air date, November 13th, 2003. Director is Danny Cannon. Writers are Anthony E. Zeiker and Josh Berman. We start this episode with kind of like shots of Vegas, but it also like looks more like financial, industrial, business district.
I gave it full credit. It's like one long panning scene.
Yes.
And eventually you can see the strip in the background. So the Vegas score isn't too high this episode anyway. Okay. So we're only at 27.
Okay. So that's high. I mean, unsurprisingly higher than last week's episode.
Yes. Yeah. Either we're at single digits last episode.
Yeah.
And so again, there's five total scenes. There's only a few cut scenes. Actually, I missed one. I caught it on the rewatch.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is why it's important that we watch these episodes
twice. Well, now I write down what minute they all occur at.
Okay. Yeah.
And
so
then
you can look back and be like,
on the rewatch, I just sort of like check.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I went, wait a second. That's not on my notes.
I don't have this one.
Yeah. It was a 3 second shot. You can see the stratosphere. It's around the 8 minute mark. I missed it the first time.
All right. Okay. So we go from shots-ish of Vegas to Warwick on the stand. He is talking about finding a knife in the suspect's car. The suspect is Michael Fife. We learn in this exchange that the victim is Rachel Lyford, and she lived at the same apartment complex as the suspect, as the defendant. The defense comes up, the lawyer comes up, and he's talking to Warwick, and he's like, hey, why did you search the vehicle? And he's like, oh yeah, this police officer, you know, he had a broken taillight and he got pulled over, blah, blah, blah. And the attorney asks, well, when was the warrant secured? And he's like, oh, the officer did that. Ovs. The officer did not.
No.
Officer Watson did not, in fact, secure a warrant. And so it was a illegal search. And so the evidence obtained via the search, not admissible.
Yeah, hence the name of the episode,
Invisible Evidence.
A number of about the guest stars in this opening scene for me. I'm going to kick it off with the defense attorney.
Okay.
Attorney Matthews, played by James Patrick Stewart. This was a tough one for me to nail down, but he plays a weird bad guy, the head of like some corporation in Supernatural. And they're like invincible demon creatures or something. And there's like this whole plot line with him. He's just such a creepy look to him.
He is also in 656 episodes of General Hospital.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Series regular. I mean, those are like one episode a day, so it's like being 600 episodes of the Jimmy Fallon show.
I know, but that's intense.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, he plays a character named Dick Roman in Supernatural, who is like the head of these, like, this whole, like, demon alien species. And I actually went and rewatched a clip from it just to be super sure. I was like, oh, yeah, definitely that guy. Just his whole mannerisms. But also Michael Fife, the defendant. And this is kind of a cool tie-in. So that's played by Christian... Let me look. I can't read my own handwriting.
Camargo. I will say this is my missed.
Okay, so
spot,
he
the guest star.
He is the antagonist in the whole first season of Dexter. He plays Dexter's brother.
I've never seen Dexter.
Who is also a serial killer, and Dexter doesn't know, and he like does, and he also dates Dexter's sister.
Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't watched the first season.
Non-biological sister.
You had plenty of time.
Yeah, yeah. So it's Brian Mosier is the name of his character in that. And so, yeah, he's it's kind of cool that he's the killer in that show. He's the alleged killer in this show. I thought that was kind of a cool little tie-in.
So this was a missed spot, the guest star for me. I should have, because I like when I saw him, I was like, oh, he kind of looks familiar. But I faked myself out and I went, it's just because you've seen this episode a bunch of times. And I didn't pursue further. And then once Nick came to me and was like, I have a ton of spot the guest stars, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do some digging into Michael Fife because I have a feeling that maybe I do, in fact, know him. I know him because he plays Wade Crocker in a sci-fi show called Haven.
Oh, okay.
And I've seen the entire series, and he's in like 6 or 7 episodes of it.
I think he's might also be, I don't know, one of these characters was also in Walking Dead, and I remember thinking, like, must not have been when I watched the show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't remember that guy from the show. We also get a glimpse of Officer Watson earlier, and I believe you had a spot the guest star for him.
Yes, so this is Lachlan Monroe. I know him from Lucifer. He plays Anthony Paolucci. He's in 3 episodes of Lucifer. And so I probably know him. He's also like, he's in Bone. Like, he's in a ton of other shows.
Yeah.
I probably have. Like, he was in a show, like a, this is like a guilty pleasure show of mine. It was called Beauty and the Beast. And it was,
oh,
pretty sure it was a CW.
Wait, I think show. Is it like a mini series?
It was like 3 or 4 seasons.
Okay. I have an ex-girlfriend who made me watch a show that's like a Beauty and the Beast style show. Maybe it's not the same thing, but it was like from the 90s, so maybe not.
No, this was like 2012 to 2016, but he's a character on that show, and I've definitely seen every episode of that show. So like, I've probably seen him in quite a few things, but I, as soon as I saw him, I was like, Lucifer. Like, I knew that I knew him from.
Speaking of guilty pleasures, I definitely know him as Hal Cooper, Betty's dad in Riverdale.
When I was looking at his IMDb, I'm like, Nick definitely knows him from Riverdale.
Mostly, actually, like, I think the reason why I know him, is that he plays a character named Greg in Scary Movie, which is like one of those Wayans brothers spoofs of Scream. That movie is like, by the way, stacked when you look at like who acts in the original movie.
Yeah.
But he plays like the dumb guy who never knows what's going on. He always plays these kind of like goof characters. And I was like, by the way, I had no idea his name was Lachlan Monroe. What a cool name.
Such a cool name.
How do I not know him because his name is cool?
Like, I've already chosen my new name, but if I hadn't, Lachlan?
Lachlan is such a good name.
So good.
I feel like 5 years from now, it's going to be like top baby name. Like, people are just got to find their way over to it.
Like, yeah. Oh, it's so good. I had the same thought when I saw his name. I was like, that is such a cool name.
Loki would be a great nickname for someone named Lachlan, too.
It would be.
Yeah.
So good. So good. So we have a plethora. We have a smorgasbord of Spot the Guest Stars.
I have one more.
A little ways down the pipeline.
Ways,
yes. Okay.
But it's kind of a really cool one.
Okay, sweet. So we'll get there in a bit. And so after we realized that the search in the vehicle is, you know, there wasn't a warrant, so the evidence is not admissible, the prosecutor asks the judge for 24 hours per Grissom's instructions.
Grissom kind of like whispers.
24 hours, and the prosecutor's like, can we get 24 hours? And so judge agrees. Grissom and Warwick are talking in the courtroom. Officer Watson approaches. This is where I marked him as a Spot the Guest Star, because this is when it's like very blatantly obvious. But we do pan and see his face earlier.
Yeah.
He's just like immediately goes to work and is like, you were unprepared and this is all on you. And work is like, the only thing you had to do was secure.
It's entirely on Officer Watson. And we don't see him ever again, by the way.
We do not. He plays no further role in this episode. We instead go to credits. We have Grissom and Work walking into the sheriff, who we've not seen for a long time.
Wait, we have never seen the sheriff.
I think it's a different sheriff.
Because this is my next Spot the Guest Star.
Okay.
So Sheriff Atwater is played by Xander Berkeley. Who I realized is apparently in many episodes. And so I had to double check that this was the first episode that he's in.
Okay.
He's in like 6 or 8 or something numbers of episodes of CSI. So we will be seeing him again. However, this is like a double good tie-in. First off, he plays a character named Percy and again, speaking of guilty pleasures, a show called Nikita, which I've talked about, because that's where I know Melinda Clark from, aka Lady Heather. In that show, he's the director of like the spy group that all the, you know, assassin people are a part of.
Okay.
He's also the director in, I don't know if it's season 1 or if he starts in season 2 of 24.
Okay. Which we've talked about a few times.
Which not only we talked about, but this episode is kind of a 24 spoof where they have 24 hours.
They do the clock.
Yeah, in the bottom of the corner. He's also the director in that. And the director of this episode, Danny Cannon, I've definitely heard you say his name many times. Yes. I looked him up And he's directed a lot of shows that I've watched. And I think that's, I think when he directs shows, he brings people in, and that tends to cause me to have a lot of spot the guest stars.
That makes sense.
Because
that
makes a lot of sense. You know, a lot of things I've seen. But I think he's also done a bunch of episodes of 24, which is probably why they brought him in.
Yeah. So I do this. Why did you try to copy something on IMDb and it like took me to that page? And I was like, no, that's not what I wanted. I want to see if, is this a new actor playing
the same character,
but a new actor?
Well, if you just probably go to Fanpedia for Sheriff Atwater.
CSI. No, they say this is like his first appearance.
Yeah.
Because
I had to look it up.
Because I was like playing it off as if like we should already know who this character is.
So the other sheriff who was also a spot the guest star in his own right. It was like the kind of balding redhead.
Yes.
He was sheriff and he ran for mayor. Mm-hmm. So now we have a new sheriff in town.
Yeah. So this is the new sheriff in town. And
also, I realized he's in a bunch of episodes. He's in like season 11, or he has like a mention in season 11, which I thought was hilarious. But he's only in season 4 and 5.
That sounds about right.
He's in a bunch of episodes. So on the fan page, it has like a little chart. So he's in like the next 2 episodes. Then he's in 1 episode at the end of this season. And then he's in 1 episode next season. And that's it.
Okay. And that's it. Okay. So this sheriff wants to talk to Grissom alone about Warwick. And so they go into Grissom's office. And Grissom, good boss. This is good Grissom boss. He's like, look, this is not Warwick's fault. Because it isn't. Like, it's not Warwick's fault that the officer didn't secure a warrant. He trusted that the officer did his job. The officer didn't do his job.
That he followed protocol.
Yeah, like, he did what he was supposed to do. And the sheriff is appreciative of Grissom and, like, the lab's work. But obviously, his first priority is himself and him looking good in these situations. So he's like, hey, I'm going to tell the media that this case is now under your purview. This is all on you now. Like, I'm like, not at fault. Like, I'm not responsible for this at any point.
I like that the plot line is the same as the last sheriff, where it's like political.
Yep. 100%. So Warwick isn't briefing the team on the case. We learn that the victim, Rachel, her case was originally Catherine's before the cases kind of like intersected each other. Grissom enters. He's like, hey, this is now like a rush case. We need to find something visible because we have this invisible evidence now. Like, we can't use the knife. We can't use the towel. So we need to find something that we can. Sarah is like, hey, I get that this is a rush, but I have my own case. And Grissom is like, this is not a negotiation. Like,
it's not.
You are on this case.
I recognize the importance of this, but I'm in the middle of my own homicide investigation.
I'll talk to your detective, explain the deal.
Well, it's not about the detective, it's about my own responsibility there.
I'm handing out assignments, Sarah. It's not a negotiation.
I don't know. Like, I kind of think that's the appropriate response from Grissom. I don't know that it makes sense for Sarah. I mean, I could understand why she would say what she said. It makes a lot of sense for every single person to be on this right away.
Yeah.
And so it makes a lot of sense for Grissom to be like, no. No, we have 24 hours.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I'll talk to your detective. Like, he's like, I understand. I'll talk to this person.
I think probably because I see a lot of myself in Sarah.
Yeah.
And so I think, while I'm not angry at Grissom for how he handled this, like, I can understand why he does. Sarah is also, and we'll kind of go into this a little bit more in the next scene, or we can just talk about it now and then we can transition to the next scene. The first 48 is the first 48 for a reason.
Yeah.
The longer you let evidence go unprocessed and the longer you don't follow up on things, the less likely you are to solve the case. And so I think she understands, like, yes, obviously there is a time crunch here, but in essence, every case is a time crunch.
See, that would have been a great line, right? For her to be like, hey, you know, I understand the importance, but like, I just opened, like, that would have been a great thing to weave in and be like, the first 48 hours are the most important in, you know, in this, in another murder, you know, scene, like, put that out in front of him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To be a reason. Cause actually I think that, like, Sarah has every right to say what she said. Right. And Grissom also has every right to make the final call. That's what the supervisor does.
Yeah.
He probably could have been a little less aggressive with it.
He was a little aggressive.
They play that up. You know, I think for the show, it's also a little uncharacteristic for him and helps build the sort of tension between these two characters.
Yeah.
for later. But like, yeah, it's sort of like reasonable. I also think they dropped this plot line way too easily in this episode.
I mean, they talk about like, so in the next scene, Sickener, I just spilled tea on my notes and I'm like,
oh no.
No, I can.
Sarah. Gotta read the tea leaves now.
Yeah, I do. I'm gonna predict the future. Sarah and Nick are waiting on the tow truck to get, because they can search the car. They just can't search. They can't. The evidence that was obtained via not a search warrant can't be used, but now they can legally search the car. So they're waiting on the tow truck. And as they're waiting on the tow truck, they're, you know, Sarah's kind of like, hey, I'm kind of upset about my case. And I love Nick. So I don't want this to be misconstrued. But Nick, your boss isn't always right about everything. Boss is, he's like, yeah. If he tells me to like stop working my case and go wash his car, I'm going to do it. Nick, no.
No.
No, you should not. The answer to that is no. Sarah's instance, I think, is a little more debatable about like, should she just have accepted what was going on?
Well, to Sarah's credit, she didn't really push back, right? Once Grissom pushed back, right? She accepted it.
Yeah, she did, right? And so
And you're allowed to be unhappy when that happens too. Like, yes, that's reasonable. Yes.
There's plenty of times where, you know, not just now, in my long and industrious career, where I have been like okay to like a directive I've been given, and I've talked to coworkers afterwards and being like, that directive was dumb, and yeah. I'm not happy that I have to do it. I'm gonna do it, but whatever. So the driver arrives with a pancake car,
which, yeah, there's like a, they go on about there being a mix-up, but also like, first off, this is a murder investigation that they were not done investigating this car.
I mean, they did say, hey, how did this happen? Yeah, yeah. Like, this was an active murder. Like, this was still an active investigation.
But also, poor Michael Fife, his car is being demolished unnecessarily. Yes, like, even if he was a murderer, right? You don't get to destroy his property per se.
That's true.
I don't really know some of these weird laws where the government's just allowed to take.
I have no idea.
Anything you used in a crime, it's a little fuzzy. But typically speaking, that, you know, he could sell his car and use that to pay his lawyer fees at some point. Yeah.
So we then have Doc Robbins with Warwick, and they're talking about Rachel's sister Rita. And again, maybe I'm just like very sensitive at the moment, and this is obviously 20 years ago, but like, Doc Robbins had to go out of his way to point out how pretty she is. And I was like, how is that?
I was like, how couldn't is figure that? Out saying the person who was killed was pretty, or if the sister was the pretty, sister. Both of which I thought were weird.
The sister.
Yeah. I was like, both of which are inappropriate.
And I just was like, yeah, I was like, why does that matter? But anyway, we learn what is important. What does matter in this scene is that the victim bled out. She was raped, but no semen was collected. And she also has like this like thin abrasion around her neck, which plays a very big factor in this episode. So I'm just gonna put a pin in that one, because it's gonna come back around.
Key evidence.
Warwick then approaches David. He asks about the substance on the victim's wrist. David is like, yeah, it was kind of like similar to like a glaze that you'd find on a donut. I sent it over to Hodges. So Warwick goes to Hodges. Results are not currently in. But him and Warwick just do not. They just, it's like oil and water, Hodges and Warwick. Because Hodges is like, oh, I heard that you like froze up in court. And Hodges is like, why did you get fired from LA again? Like,
remind me again what happened in LA?
What happened in LA?
Oh man, Hodges, this episode, there's some good things lobbed in Hodges' general direction.
There are. So as he's walking away from Hodges, he has a walk and talk with Jim Brass, and we learn that the family is, they want, so the victim always wore a chain, and around and on those chain with her were her father's dog tags, and so the family wants them back. And this is where Warwick is like, hold on a second, like, she has this abrasion, there is a good chance that the killer and rapist took by force this chain, which is why it wasn't returned like with the rest of her property. We then have Grissom dusting a bottle. Warwick enters. Grissom is saying that he found a print. Warwick starts working on the sheets. He finds a similar substance that was on the wrist of the victim, also on the sheets. And then there's a conversation between Grissom and Warwick where Warwick is like looking at the clock and Grissom's like, stop doing that. And Warwick is like, well, we, you know, like we're running out of time. And Grissom's like, don't worry about it. And Warwick looks at Grissom and he's like, not even you can stop time.
Yes.
And then walks away. Dramatic. We then have Catherine back at the crime scene. There's a female officer there. And we learn that first time around, Catherine processed this scene for like 12 hours straight. She went over everything. And she's like talking to the officer who brings up the point that most men cannot wait to take off that rubber jacket after the act. And so did she check the waist bit? And Catherine's like, of course I checked the waist bit. She did not say it like that. No. I added that extra flourish. But that's not the only place that you can dispose of said rubber jacket. So
there's always a garbage disposal.
There's also a garbage disposal.
Don't do that.
This prompts Catherine to go check the toilet, and lo and behold, condom with semen in it.
Well, she just finds semen on the handle, right? Or just...
I know the officer says, is there semen? And she's like, yes.
Yeah, it's on the flusher handle. There's a little
smudge. Yeah, because she said sticky fingers, because he had sticky fingers or something like that. So
I'm surprised he didn't hide it in the bowl.
Yeah. This is true. We then have Nick and Sarah. They're working on expanding the car. Once they have it at a safe spot where they can go in and investigate, Sarah finds a parking placard, like a hanging sign for the apartment complex that he's in.
Which is also fairly important evidence.
Yes, it is. Nick finds white threads. Sarah's very quick to be like, you can't trace white threads. Like, that's just... And he's like, okay, no, but these have like a reddish brown stain and it could be blood. And so this could be important.
I assume this is like from the towel.
Yes. That is the idea. I mean, that this is from the towel. Yeah.
So like, I don't know why you'd have to trace it. But
I think they need to, because the towel doesn't exist in evidence. They have to
like,
establish.
If you could say it's like a towel and it matches another towel in her room, then I guess you could start to create a...
I think it's more so if you process the blood and get DNA and prove that it's the victim's DNA, you have the victim's DNA in his car, which now you can't say that you do, because all the evidence that you have that says that is not admissible.
No, I meant like why you might want to trace the towel, trace a white thread to begin with, right? It's like, maybe if you could, like, if it was somehow unique, then you could somehow make, you know, start to paint the picture, even though you don't have the towel.
That makes sense. So then we have Warwick going up to Jackie, and we learn that that beer bottle that Grissom was processing, the print on it matches the suspect. Bam, bam, bam. Dun, dun, dun. So we have Warwick and Jim Brass with Fife and his lawyer. And the lawyer is like, I advised him not to take this meeting. Put it on record. Told him not to take this meeting. They talk anyway. But he explains why his print is on the beer bottle, and it's because the night before the victim was killed, there was like a party out in the courtyard, and she placed her trash like out in the more common area. So as he's like walking around and drinking a beer, he finishes up, puts it in her barrel or her little basket, and then she must have brought her basket back into her apartment.
I have a weird gripe about this, which is that, like, all right, quite the spoiler alert that Michael Fife is not the terminal killer in this case.
Very true story.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's a whole set of dialogue where it's just like, you know, I think there's with one of the other lawyer, with a different lawyer later on, like, oh, so my client, you know, like my client just happened to put this murder weapon in the backseat of somebody who lives at this location. And then there's a piece of evidence that sort of explains how he knew that this person would be so close. But like, what are the odds that the person who he found and ran into and chose to plant a murder weapon on also just happened to be the only person at that courtyard party who put a bottle in her trash? I was like, it's so statistically unlikely that this piece of evidence would come up. It only happens because it's TV. It's only to sort of draw out the mystery to keep the chase going. That, like, it's like, when I was there, I'm like, this is, I didn't really pick up on this until the rewatch. I went, it's like, it's so unlikely for this to have happened, but that doesn't mean it couldn't have happened. It's just a little over the top. I was like, this is theatrical evidence at this point. And so, but yeah, although to their credit, It didn't really bother me the first time I watched the episode. It only stood out in the second time. So I think because they didn't make that big of a deal of it.
So we then have the sister Rita. She's at HQ. She wants to talk to Warwick. She wants to know, like, hey, is Fife gonna pay? And Warwick just, like, he does. I mean, he answers her, but not really. He kind of like dismisses her. It's like, hey, we're working on it. And she's just like, oh, well, you had enough time for a coffee break. And he's like, this is the first, like, coffee I've had in 12 hours. And essentially walks away. Nick then approaches, as the sister is still having a pretty difficult time. He understands what she's going through, ensures her that, like, everybody's on the case, and she, like, calms down, and she leaves. Nick then walks into where Warwick is, and he's like, man, what is up with you? What is going on? Argument ensues. Warwick is like, I'm just trying to work this case, and if you want
to... over.
You want to empathize, that's your business, but, like, I don't have to.
And so, I didn't get the difference between empathize and sympathize.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what order he said. He said if
he was saying Nick empathizes and he sympathizes, which is basically saying, like, it's not that I don't care, dude. It's just that I don't need to spend my time being the shoulder for someone to cry on, or the support network, or, you know, however you want to think about it.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, Nick is, this is not the first time this season where Nick is kind of like taking the time to sort of like interject himself and be that sociable person, which isn't maybe the best for CSI. I think Sarah pointed out in that earlier episode. I'm kind of curious now. I'm like, oh, I wonder if this is going to lead to somewhere, like, well, this season or something. This could be a thread.
Yeah. But we cut to Warwick in the bathroom. He's washing his face. Catherine enters and she's like, hey, how are you? How are you doing? And he's just like, oh, you know, I'm fine. And she's like, are you sure? Because you're in the women's bathroom. And he's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And she's like, look, totally fine. So they're talking about the case and the trial. Warwick doesn't think it's going to go to trial. Catherine's like, you know, let's be more optimistic. And, you know, they're talking about it being a rush. And Catherine's like, rush isn't just, we only have this amount of time to get this done. It's also like the feeling you get when you, like, nail the guy. So, like, let's focus on, like, the positive aspects of the rush and just, you know, do the best that we can. We then have Hodges waving Grissom over. He has ID'd the substance. It is wax. He doesn't know exactly what type of wax at this point, but it does have a low melting point. And Grissom is, like, walking away, and he's like, hey, if you ever want to talk. And Hodges is like, yes, please, like, when is good for you? And Grissom lets him know that there's a psychologist on site twice a week, and he can go talk to that person if he needs somebody to talk to.
I don't really get why Hodges needs to talk to you. I feel like over time maybe I'll learn more about this, his backstory, but it seemed like a weird thing, but it was also hilarious. I loved it.
Grissom then walks into a room where Greg Sanders, Warwick, and Catherine are. They're waiting on the DNA results from the condom, and come to find out, suspect does not match. It is not consistent with the DNA pulled from the condom.
I think this, during this scene, Grissom, like, refers to Hodges as, like, what's his name?
Yes, he does. I think he does.
And I just, this is what I loved it so much.
I think that's a little bit later.
He's such a brown noser. Yeah, he's such a brown noser. I love that Grissom doesn't even know his name. I can't imagine Grissom would do that just to slight him, because that's just not the kind of person Grissom is. So he really just doesn't know his name. I think it's hilarious.
I agree with that assessment. Nick enters. He lets Grissom know that the sheriff is looking for him. We then have the team, minus Grissom, at the table talking. They are trying to figure out how... Oh, no, I think Grissom is there. Never mind. Just kidding. I'm misreading my own notes. They're kind of talking about, like, how did the knife end up in Fife's car? And I think Grissom makes mention of, like, well, why don't we check the knife? And they're like, well, we can't. And he's like, no, that exclusionary rule doesn't apply to a new suspect. Like, if we think it is a new suspect, we can go and examine the knife in relation to a new suspect.
All right. I got a question.
Yes.
Just last episode, mm-hmm. we had this back and forth with the sheriff, or the lieutenant, because he was insinuating that Grissom might not have had a warrant for this barn. But Grissom's attestation, this is that it only matters to the person whose civil rights you had violated. So if the murderer didn't own that barn, then it wouldn't even have mattered that Grissom, if Grissom had entered it without a warrant.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the rule is. I kind of want to look. I probably should look it up, because my guess is, like, obviously it's important to have a warrant you know?
Yeah, of course.
Maybe they're two different things. Like, maybe it's like, even though they share something in common, maybe it's like, listen, you can't just like search wherever you want, whatever you want. That is one reason why we throw something out. And then in this particular case, you know, it's maybe there was like, it was procedurally a problem that they didn't get the warrant, even though they sort of had a reason to collect some of the evidence, you know, search the car. That's what I mean. It's a little fuzzy. I was like, what's the rule? Is the rule just the person whose property you were, you know, violating, or is the rule like it's out, if it's out, it's out, you know? In this episode, it's the former. The last episode, they insinuated it might be the latter. So I got to figure that out. We got a lot of episodes of CSI to go.
We have plenty of CSI episodes to go. So then Grissom stands up to talk to the sheriff, and he essentially tells him, like, look, when I know something, you will. We're following the evidence. Hold on to your butts. We then have Nick examining the knife. He notices a substance on the handle. Sarah's then looking at the sheet that is, like, from the crime scene that is now hung up. Grissom enters the room, and she's like, pin me down. Which for... Again, I've seen CSI, you know, I've seen all these episodes multiple times. I thought this scene already happened. So when it happened in this episode, I was like, I could have sworn that we had this scene already.
There's a scene not that unlike this, I feel like.
Maybe I'm like confusing the two of them.
Maybe it wasn't Grissom, though. Like, I feel like this is not the first time Sarah has been like asked somebody to put her in sort of a explicit position.
Yeah, I'm thinking of it with Grissom. And so maybe I'm just thinking that this already happened, but this is where it happens. So as they're kind of walking through it, they realize that this wax substance, you know, got on her wrist because he was, you know, holding her down using her wrists. And then when he was done, he put his hands on the bed for leverage to stand up. Thus how it got transferred onto the sheets. So then after they kind of like disengage from this position, Sarah's like, hey, like, I just want to make sure that like what did so I shouldn't happen between us isn't going to be a factor in the promotion that I put up for. Grissom says nothing, just looks at her, and she's just like, oh, you know what, never mind, just kidding, shouldn't have said anything, I always overtalk around you, and just pieces out. This not the best possible.
No, Grissom, there was like an exchange where Grissom's like, oh, it's on my desk or something.
Yeah, about the promotion.
But yeah. But then, yeah, when it comes to like, you know, will it impact? I think he's like confused.
He's like confused.
I also feel like, even as a viewer of the show, I'm still like, I feel like they're treating as if more happened between the two of them than that really did.
Yeah.
And so, I was like, did I miss an episode?
Yeah, you're like, did I miss? As we review every single one of these, did I somehow miss one?
Was there a summer special?
Yeah, there was not. We return to Hodges, but now he's with Catherine. He's talking about body wax, which is not relevant to the case. Catherine knows all about it, though. Catherine's like, yeah, duh, I know all about body wax. We learn, in fact, that the wax substance is Axion car wax. So then we're with Catherine Warwick. They're with Grissom in his office, and they're pondering where does Fife get his car washed from. And so Jim Brass and Warwick are once again with Fife and his lawyer, and they want like details on his timeline. Like around the time of the murder.
They have a thing where they're like, you know, do we want to push this? Because the moment the lawyer knows where he want to.
Yeah. They might be able to get Fife released.
They're going to probably get him released, which I'm always kind of like, yeah, but like, if you really don't think he has. Also, just because he gets released does not mean you do not get to rearrest him and try him.
Very true.
Later on, yeah, if you find more evidence.
This is not double jeopardy at this point.
It is going to look bad.
Yes.
You know, that's, you know, it's not going to be good for saving face, but sure. It does not mean he walks.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he, you know, goes over his day, like what he's doing. And as they're talking to him, Catherine and Grissom are watching this interrogation. And Catherine lets Grissom know that she liked his tough act. She liked the this is not a negotiation, and she thinks he needs to be like stricter more often.
Yeah,
when it comes to, like, his
manner. He's like too tough. She's like not tough enough. But just sort of the way she says it, not tough enough. It's almost like she's like, I don't know, Grissom, you're starting to get kind of, it's like getting the ire or the attention of two ladies in CSI apparently. Mm-hmm.
So then they go back to Fife, and he mentions stopping off at a car wash, one that's about a block from his apartment. And they continue talking about the car wash, and he confirms that the attendant did not mention his taillight. And isn't that weird? Wouldn't you think that if you went through a car wash with a broken taillight, that the attendant would be like, hey, you have a broken taillight, because they don't want to be found liable for your broken taillight.
Listen, I don't want to throw shade at anybody who works at a car wash, but if you told me that I went to a car wash and I had a broken taillight and I came to the other side and nobody told me, I would be like, yeah, that tracks. These people don't care about me and the situation with my taillight.
Evidently, this car wash really cares. They really, care.
I mean, the average car wash I go to now is like, you pay a guy, you pull in, you pay a guy, and then you don't see another, once you start going to that tunnel, you don't see another person ever again.
Right.
This is a very different car wash, a lot more people working at, a lot more hands-on. So it is a different animal to what I'm accustomed to. But I was like, it's not like car washes are like notorious for being like the highest level of like service, like a fine dining restaurant or something.
Right. So we then have Catherine Warwick and an officer at said car wash. They approach the manager. They're asking about the filter, because they're like, hey, they're thinking if someone here broke the taillight, then pieces of the taillight would be in this filter. So
they use this technique that they have used in another episode. I forget what it was.
The restaurant one.
Yeah, it's like, we got to shut you down when you're the most busiest. Yep. Unless you just shut down now for us.
Yep. Which, so they pull, I guess, that it one. Works. It works. So the manager agrees, and they get into the trap. Catherine finds broken taillight. And so they're talking to the manager, and he's like, in this tunnel, there are no accidents. Like, if a car gets within 3 feet of another car, the whole thing shuts down. Like, there's no way that this could have been.
That's
like
impressive.
It's very impressive. I color me impressed.
I feel like this was considered cutting edge tech at the time.
I would think so.
Like, I think they were like trying to make it sound like it's cutting edge.
Yeah.
I bet you that still doesn't exist in most cars. Now it would be cheap. It would be dirt cheap to implement.
So we then have Jabraz, Catherine, and work with the staff from the car wash. They're there to get DNA. A blonde guy in line asks to use the bathroom. Catherine's like, hold your horses. Like, it's going to take me like 10 seconds to swab you. Just relax. And then he does, you know, she has an officer escort him to the bathroom. We then have Catherine with said blonde guy and his lawyer. Look at that. His DNA matched the DNA pulled from the condom.
I do think it's interesting. Like, Brass says, thank you for coming down and volunteering your DNA.
Yeah.
Dude, I would never volunteer my DNA if I was that dude. No. Like, I just wouldn't come down. I would just be like, no, I just don't want to take a day out of my afternoon. Why is that so weird?
Yeah.
I got the impression that it wasn't voluntary. He was just framing it that way.
Possibly.
Because I think maybe that would have been enough evidence to get a warrant to collect DNA from everybody who was there.
Yeah. Yeah. So this blonde guy is claiming that the victim, Rachel, hired him to wax her car. That's like, and then we get this like flashback that she, like, his point of view flashback is that she's like kind of coming on to him and being flirty, and Catherine shuts it down. Catherine's like, that is not what happened. She did not come on to you.
Like, you wish.
Stop it. And they kind of walk through how he in fact planted the knife in Fife's car because he saw the placard the car was coming through, and he was like, lucky day, here's the same placard from the same apartment complex. I'll just like stash it in this car. And it
was nearby. Like, they've sort of established that like this is a neighborhood car wash.
Yeah. And this is where the dog tags come back up. Work holds up the dog tags, and he's like, these are Rachel's father's dog tags, and you hid them in the bathroom. I did put a note down. Why no flush? Why not flush
them down the toilet? Tags?
Why would you put them in the top thing? Flush them down the toilet.
Well, he wanted to go back for them. Serial, like,
oh yeah,
you know, like, you
yeah,
know,
memorabilia. Like, yeah, they're like,
you didn't want to be caught with it, but mostly so that Work could find them.
I know.
I was actually, at first when he held him up, I was like, wait, didn't somebody escort him to the bathroom? And I was like, oh, okay. He had to, he couldn't put him in the trash. He had to put them, yeah, in, the,
he had to put them
in the toilet. Yeah. Also, but like, definitely should have flushed them, because I feel like if I was an officer and I was watching someone who was potentially a suspect in the bathroom,
and I heard the cop being lifted up, it causes a lot of noise. They're not quiet. No.
I was like, I'd be like, what are you doing in there?
The toilet that we had growing up, I think my mom has since replaced it, but for whatever reason, the chain would sometimes come off, and so we'd have to
lift
the lid up and like reattach the chain to get it to like flush. And so I know very well what that sounds like to pull the
top. Sometimes our flapper doesn't seal and it runs, and you have to like,
yeah, you have to like push it down,
pull it up.
Yeah. And so work shows the autopsy picture that illustrates the abrasion around the victim's neck, and he's like, these dog tags were ripped off of her neck. Like, she did not give them to you. Well, Catherine's like, she gave them to you over her dead body, but she did not willingly give them to you. Like, you stole them. So then we have Warwick giving testimony again on this new suspect. And this
time, did we not get his name?
I don't think we did. That's why I keep saying like blonde guy and suspect, because I'm like, I don't
know. I just realized like I don't know his name either.
And I don't think he was in the top
cast. Yeah, he's not in the top page.
So, but this time,
auto detail guy. Oh, that's a different person.
But this time, the defendant is going to stand trial. There's enough evidence, and it was collected in the correct way that it is good to go to trial. And after, you know, this session is dismissed, Warwick goes to the family, to Rita and her mom, and is like, hey, I'm sorry for your loss. We're going to get the dog tags back to you as soon as we can. They thank Warwick. And then the sheriff enters, and he wants to include Warwick on his little press conference. And so Warwick has to go and answer the questions that might be a little over the sheriff's head. And that's essentially the end of the episode. So Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I like today's episode. By the way, his name is Gary Quinn.
Oh, okay. I tried to pay attention to see if they said his name at any point, and I was like, I guess not.
Interesting. He's apparently in A Few Good Men, the movie. I didn't recognize him.
I haven't seen that movie, so.
Sounds like he plays a major, I mean, I'm looking at this screenshot, he plays a major part. But I like the episode. I give it 3.5 and a play, no replay. I didn't necessarily feel like the second watch was good. I was very close to giving it 4. I just kind of like, was like, after the replay, I was like, yeah, I just need something. And I was like, I just feel like I didn't get it.
Yeah.
So I ended at 3.5. But I liked the episode a lot. It was good. Good team stuff. Good plot line. Everyone's involved. There are some really good funny moments. It is a one storyline episode. I like the concept of sort of like the 24-hour thing. You know, they started with the clock in the bottom left hand corner. After the Grissom thing, they kind of stopped showing it. So I kind of lost track of where we were.
Yeah, where we were.
We were just throwing out things. Yeah. I thought it'd be fun if they kept that motif going throughout the episode.
Yeah.
So a few little things here and there. But yeah, good episode.
Yeah, so for me, I'm going to give it a three out of 5. So similar, it's a watch. I wouldn't like, it's not like a horrendous rewatch by any stretch of the imagination, but I wasn't like, yay, I get to rewatch this one. It was just like, okay, I'm going to watch again. I will say that I enjoyed this episode more than I remembered enjoying it, which is always nice, because a few times that an episode is coming up that I'm like, this is one of those ones I was like, I don't think I particularly like this one. I definitely liked it more than I remembered liking it. I debated like 3.5 versus 3, and I decided on 3. Because this episode theoretically has a lot of the things that I enjoy, like the entire cast was involved, and there is good like backstory and character development, and Hodges from the lab, and Jackie and Greg Sanders weren't, you know, they got like lab people involved, and David and Doc Robbins. And so, but I think the reason I gave it a 3 versus bumping it up to say a 3.5 is that I just didn't really enjoy the storyline. Like the case part of it just kind of fell a little flat. Like,
it finishes up at the end really fast in almost an unfulfilling kind of way.
That happened way too quickly, and like almost, I don't want to say too easily, but like almost too easily. And then especially, I will say that this is even more pronounced on like an additional watch of this episode. Like, it probably doesn't come across if you've only seen this episode once, but they are really harsh to Michael Fife, who is innocent.
Yeah.
And Jim Brass is like, essentially like yelling at him in interrogation. There's no apology. There's no like, whoops.
Yeah.
Like we came to the wrong, we jumped to the wrong conclusion on like limited evidence and we shouldn't have done that. Sorry, man.
No. And your car has been in, you know, pancaked and then reinflated.
Yep.
And, you know,
and at no one point,
he's been incarcerated
for like 10 days. Has he lost his job? Because he can't show up for work for 10 days? What other rant? Like, is his wife going to use, like, we just learned that he's, I was going to say, like, his, we don't know if he has kids. Like, his wife use this as, like, a thing against custody against him? Like, there's so many ramifications for this. And
it's
going to
be a while before this case gets closed fully, right? And he can feel, like, fully exonerated.
Yes.
People will always judge him a little bit.
And I just feel like they're just like, oopsie poopsies. Like, whoops, very potentially destroyed this man's life. And we're just going to be like,
see him again. You know what I mean?
No.
I mean, like,
I think, like, if we had gotten a scene.
Closure for that.
Yes. Been good. If we had gotten a scene wherein, like, and I'm not saying, like, I guess I understand that, like, legally they're not going to, like, apologize to him, but, like, just some sort of scene. That we get a close up with Michael Fife, then I think this definitely could have been bumped up to a 3.5, if not a 4. Because again, there was a lot of things about this episode that I really enjoyed, but it's just the actual case.
I mean, and Michael again, Fife, he still had a warrant for marijuana possession.
Yeah,
but like, he's not like he's a model citizen. I mean, come on. That's exactly how I feel.
And this is an example of why I'm generally not a fan of one case episodes, because when the one case falls flat, if it's only one, you don't have another one that can maybe boost the episode up and compensate for it. And I feel like this is the trap, and this is why I generally don't like one case episodes.
And I've a few times now been like, they're a little too judgy of people.
Yes, you have brought that up, and like, this season especially. And
this is another great example.
I agree. And so, yeah, it is what it is. It's a good episode. I would say watch it. Don't think it deserves a rewatch. And yeah, this is an example of why one case episodes aren't generally usually my favorite episodes. But we'll see how we feel about next episode when we return to review season 4, episode 8 after the show. Otherwise, we will talk to you next
week. No spoilers.
Nope. Spoilers.